Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. This edition of the Hagmann Report. It's Monday. It feels like a Monday. It's Monday, February 10th, 2025. I want to welcome everyone to today's program. Thank you, Eric the Tech, for all you do. Thank you, folks in the chat. Good to see you. Missed you all weekend. Steelers Mom, good to see you. Oh, Mighty Quinn, 97. Good to see as well as pretty much everybody, you know, Rehoboth Farms. I'll tell you what, the core. Can you feel it? The core of the show. It's really great to have you. Before I get into the show, you know what? The reason I look so good, right? Folks, chuckdefense.com/Hagmann. You know Chuck Norris. You wonder what happened to the guy. He's 84 years old. Yeah, I saw the video that he made. I do watch this, you know, just because it gives me hope for me. Okay, seriously, it does. Chuck Norris, he's in his 80s, still kicking behinds, working out, staying active. He can work out longer, even has plenty of energy left over for his grandkids. Just ask Eric the Tech and my daughter how much energy I have left over. I do. I got both grandkids still on my back when I do push-ups. Yeah. Eric the Tech, he's there. He knows. Yeah. Nothing. Look, Chuck made a very special video that explains everything. Make sure you watch it. Go to chuckdefense.com/Hagmann. There's a link in the description box below this video, but it's chuckdefense.com/Hagmann. chuckdefense.com/Hagmann. It's going to change the way you think about your health. Okay? You won't believe how simple this is to do. Okay. You won't believe it. Once again, that's chuckdefense.com/Hagmann. Click on the link in the description box below to watch the video now. Watch it. All right. Big show. A lot of information to get into. Where to start? There was a plane crash in Scottsdale. When I say plane crash, let me just clarify this. The Scottsdale runway closed after plane crashes into jet upon arrival. One person has died from that incident. This came out like within the last couple of, I'm going to say 90 minutes to 3 hours. According to reports, a private jet crashed into another plane, but this is 2:45 this afternoon local time, so that would be put at about 6 p.m., 5:45 p.m. Eastern time. The accident occurred upon arrival to runway 21, and the runway there is closed. There is a video out on the social media. Folks, I'm not gonna play it just because there's no reason to play it. You get the idea. It's a plane crash. There are two airplanes hitting one another and causing one death. All right. Now, a lot of things going on. Folks, to announce this, I want to make sure everyone... Hey, tune in tomorrow to InfoWars. At the moment, the way it is right now, I'll be on in the second hour. That would be 12 Central, 1 Eastern with Alex tomorrow. So that's kind of good. I haven't done that in a while. And finally today, they said, come on. Now, that is subject to change depending on news, okay? If there's something that happens, you know, it happens, right? So I've been rescheduled before, but tomorrow at the moment, scheduled to be on with Alex Jones on InfoWars at 1 p.m. Eastern time. All right. I suppose we'll get right into the big story. And this is something that Alex Jones asked me about today. The big story is about folks. Have you seen this? I want to kind of take a poll here on social media. Man, it's all over social media, Facebook and X and everywhere. A private criminal complaint against Josh Shapiro, the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, our governor, by a so-called self-proclaimed whistleblower and FBI employee. Have you seen this? In the chat, can you give me a yes or no? I just want to kind of gauge if anyone heard about this private criminal complaint against Josh Shapiro by a federal whistleblower that has to do with the assassination attempt on President Donald Trump. Have you seen this? Yes, yes, and yes. Nope, no, yes. Okay, so it's kind of 50-50, or maybe 70-30, the way it's looking up here. Okay. All right. So let me get right into this, because I've got some thoughts on this, and I've got some issues on this. I read the criminal complaint and the link to a PDF on a RICO case that's affiliated with this complaint. The complaint was filed twice, once, I believe, in August, and once most recently by the affiant Hadassah Feinberg. Okay, it's a female. That's Hadassah Feinberg. That's the affiant. And it is a criminal complaint against Josh Shapiro and others at L about the conspiracy, essentially the conspiracy to murder President Trump in Butler, Pennsylvania on July 13th of last year. Okay. Eric the Tech, I'm not sure how good of a job I did on this. Oh, I guess I did okay, because you have the link. All right. Or you have the image. There is the cover sheet. Now, let me explain a few things to people, okay? First of all, take a breath. Everyone take a breath. Everyone just take a breath. In the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, we have something that are called, I'm going to start from zero to, I'm going to be basic, going to be straightforward, and just tell you what I think at this point. In the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, we have something called a private criminal complaint. And the reason we have that, I've filed, let's see, in my career as an investigator, I have, in the private sector now, I have filed 15 of these. 14 were approved. My 14 were approved. Again, this is just some history so you know where I'm coming from. One was disapproved because the DA was refiling under a different charge. Okay, a more severe charge, actually. So, I filed these myself with the district attorney, and that's what you do. You in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. So, under what circumstances would you file a private criminal complaint? A, when the police won't file a criminal complaint against whoever you're accusing the criminal act of. Okay, that's A. B, if you have to circumvent law enforcement, we'll say. For whatever reason, generally those are the two most common reasons. All right, and it's submitted to a district attorney. Now, what you're looking at there is a cover sheet, basically. And what happens is it's submitted to a DA. The DA will either approve this to go forward. And what happens next is up to the district attorney. And that, of course, it depends on the charges. Or B, will disapprove. Say, no, I'm not going to do it. Not going to do it. Okay. So what you're looking at on the screen is a cover page. And it's a list the defendant, list the affiant, and of course in the top left it has room for all of the numbers to be filled in and such. Okay, and then as you scroll down, you can see the allegations, or I'm sorry, scroll down, scroll down, there we go, right, keep going, or okay, now I'm looking at, I'm 10 seconds behind, Eric, I'm sorry. Okay, you keep it right there. All right, so the allegations. I accuse the above named defendant, who lives at the address set forth above, of, and then you list the, you know, where it happened, what happened, the time, the date, and generally speaking, you get very specific into this, okay? Very specific. All right, which would be actually on the following page. So if you can put up the following page with the allegations, if you're accusing someone of doing something, the following page basically says, see affidavit, okay? And you can find this, folks, if you go to my X feed at Hagman Report, two ends on Hagman, you can see I reposted, I can't remember, I reposted, I don't recall who, I think it might have been someone affiliated with the Republican Party here in Pennsylvania, reposted their feed. But that does not necessarily give it more legitimacy. All right, there it is right there. That's the second page. And there is where you would spell out what you're accusing the person of doing. All right. Now, if it's complicated, complex, or whatever, or if it involves more than one person, you use another page, and you have to swear to it. Just as you have to swear to this. You take this before a municipal court judge in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, and all the municipal court judge does is swears that you take the papers and you go into a magistrate's office, and you raise your right hand, and he looks at the papers and makes sure they're, you know, signed, and you got everything there, and he swears you under oath and that the information you provide is true and you're not committing perjury. You say, I do, fine. From there, and this varies by county. Either the magistrate sends it to the district attorney, or you take it to the district attorney after the magistrate signs it. 99, I'm not aware of any other county that you as the affiant would take it. It would be up to the district magistrate to make sure that the DA district attorney gets it. Okay, so that's the process. That's the reasoning behind it. The person, the affiant, is of course Hadassin Feinberg. Okay, if we can go to the next page, which is I guess the meat of it, and I'll explain why I want everyone to take a deep breath. I mean, a big deep breath, and look at this as well. You know what? It could be very well possible, but man, there's some problems with this. I've got some problems with this. All right. So the first line, I, Hadassin Feinberg, affiant and federal whistleblower. Okay. Is that self-appointed or is that verified through previous or current activities? That's a question. Now, I do know that allegations were made in a federal setting by this individual that could classify her as a whistleblower, but I'm not so sure about that. But she writes, I hereby allege that Shapiro, in his personal, individual, and official capacity, facilitated, organized, and so on, carried out his plan to assassinate President Donald J. Trump on July 13, 2024. Defendant Shapiro was unsuccessful in completing his mission, but is responsible for organizing and facilitating it, comma, injuring the current president, again, comma, and causing the murder of Corey Comparator. Now, okay, well stated. Okay, that's fine. I would have put a little bit more detail into that, but that's just me. But considering the front page, which lacked the detail, didn't have it, that detail should have been on the front page, on the kind of the cover page, if you will. Is that a big deal? Well, to me, it speaks of, boy, not being familiar with the process. Just saying, okay? Now, when you submit a criminal complaint, here's the rub, folks. This person could have intimate knowledge and photographs, details, fingerprints, DNA, recordings, I mean, out the wazoo. That person could. I don't know. You know why I don't know? Chat, I'm going to turn to you. Why don't I know? What evidence Hadassah Feinberg has or doesn't have? Why don't I know this? Chat? I'll give it like 5 more seconds because of the lag in my preview monitor. But, you know, think about it. Because it isn't there. Okay, I'm not sure. You mean it's not on the paper or not present in the larger sense? Or did not state. Well, simply put, did not state. Okay, every criminal complaint that I have ever turned in, and again, I'm 15 for 15. And why so few? Because generally you go to the law enforcement officers, okay, the law enforcement detail, or the jurisdiction, the police or whoever. Generally, when you do this, you better have your together. You better have, okay, on such and such a date, at this time, I saw this, supported by whatever evidence you have, attachment A, whatever, exhibit A. And you better label the exhibits. You better be precise. Okay. And you better detail everything. Everything. Eric the Tech, I think you saw one of my private criminal complaints. As a matter of fact, I know you did, and you went to court with me. What happened? I think Eric the Tech might remember. Yeah. Okay. He might be busy, otherwise busy. So the criminal affidavit lacks detail, specifics. Okay. You would say, like I said, you would type out very, very, and the reason I'm dragging this out or being long-winded on this is because this is important. This person could have, like I said, could have all sorts, stacks of evidence, DNA, everything. Witness statements. Could have an FBI agent in her trunk. I don't know. No, there's no such thing. No such thing as being sealed in a case like this. No. Yeah, I by the way, DJ Harp, 19, I got like, I don't know, 800 emails about this. Okay. So, Eric Thick, if you want to scroll down a little bit on this. Defendant Shapiro conspired and colluded with Pennsylvania officials, namely Pennsylvania State Commissioner Christopher Parris. Now, he testified before Congress, okay? And the committee investigating this. He testified there. And what she is claiming, well, let me just read it. To carry out the attempted assassination of President Donald J. Trump on July 13th, 2024, defendant Shapiro commenced the facilitation and coordination of the attempted assassination by utilizing Pennsylvania State Trooper Commissioner Christopher Paris to conceal the crimes. How? Before? During? After? How? Maybe this next paragraph will tell us. Paris made false and inconsistent statements under oath to the Senate Judiciary Committee around August 2024. Okay. How can you prove that? He falsified statements to thwart and impede the criminal investigation and obscure the discovery of facts leading up to the attempted assassination. Butler, Pennsylvania defendants Shapiro and Christopher Paris's actions were willful, not a security failure, as defendant Paris testified under oath to the Senate Judiciary Committee. Okay. So in other words, he deliberately lied. Simply stated, they both did. Or Paris did, that is, deliberately lied under oath, period. As opposed to, whatever, being incorrect, with the intent to thwart and impede the criminal investigation. Again, I would have to wit, for example, or something to that effect, and then this statement, and then I would rebut that statement, this statement, and then rebut that statement, okay, based on that paragraph. Not there. And again, this person might be the most honest, greatest person on the planet. I don't know this person. I'm just looking at the work product here. All right. That's all I'm saying. I'm not going to go through every single painful detail of this, but really there's not that much more. So. Obviously, she writes that on July 13th, President Trump was shot from the Pennsylvania State Police perimeter at the Butler, Pennsylvania rally. Interesting sentence there. Was shot from the Pennsylvania State Police perimeter at the Butler, Pennsylvania rally. Okay. Well, based on the documents I have, which are authenticated documents, in fact, different copies from different agencies, there really is no Pennsylvania. There are various perimeters, but not a Pennsylvania. Let's see here. State police perimeter. Okay. I mean, there's an area. There are designated areas, but a perimeter? No. The perimeter is established by the Secret Service. I'll give that a pass because that might just be semantics. Defendant Paris, and moving down a little bit, the defendant Paris fabricated, distorted, willfully blamed the U.S. Secret Service for security failures in an effort to divert the criminal investigation, conceal the crimes. Okay. Was it the purview? Was that roof on the AGR building, was that the purview of the Pennsylvania State Police? Not according to all of the pre-event documents, security documents that were submitted to Congress by different agencies that actually were done by different agencies and people, but matched pretty much with... But they pretty much matched one another, okay? So as an investigator, I'm looking at the documents. Now, I mean, they match, and there's no, there's really no issue with the perimeters. But is it the responsibility of the PSP, that roof overlook? No. So either... She's implying, inferring, What's I don't know. Either she's stating that this occurred from somewhere else, or that PSP somehow had oversight responsibility on where Crooks was, or something totally different, perhaps another shooter in another area. The thing is, when you submit a private criminal complaint, you better spell it out. And you better be able to back it up. Now, the next couple of sentences really don't establish that they got nothing to do with this whatsoever. Nothing. Paris and Shapiro are named in a lawsuit. Da-da-da-da-da-da. RICO thing. Can you put that back up for a sec? I'm sorry. There we go. Yeah. Okay. Okay. And then the page goes into, all right, so on February 5, 2025, at least five federal what? Federal agents, federal lampposts, federal, again, I make mistakes 1,000 times, 1,000,000 times a day. But if you are submitting something that you know is that has a potential to rock the world, you better have somebody proofread it, or you better proofread it yourself. At least five federal something provided witness testimony to the state and federal crimes committed by defendant Shapiro. On and on. What does that have to do with the event on July 13th, 2024 in Butler at 6:11 p.m. Eastern Time? What does that have to do with that event? Okay. Can you scroll down? Oh, there we go. All right. And scroll down if you don't mind, so I can read it here, because I did not print a copy of this out.
That's the end of that page.
Oh, that's the end of that page? Okay, if you go to the next page. Because she writes, on February 5, at least five federal provide witness testimony to the state and federal crimes committed by defendant Shapiro. Okay, it has nothing to do. So she's alleging that something, that Shapiro was involved in federal crimes, and she does. She gets into that on, I think, this next page. Page 3, or page, I'm not sure what, if it's not numbered, I don't believe. But she gets into this over the last 10 years, including, and then she lists 1, 2, 3 other individuals. And now the next paragraph, in the days leading up to the attempted assassination, Alex Soros made credible threats to assassinate President Trump. Again, open source. We know that. He's never faced any criminal investigating despite his valid threats. Okay. Again, that's really not an allegation. That's just an observation. Defendant Shapiro, a close confidant of Soros and recipient of large campaign donations, carried out. Now, here it is right here. Carried out the premeditated plan to thwart President Trump from being elected. The defendant Shapiro was actively engaged in laundering funds with Ukraine. What is that? You have to show a connection. Premeditated plan to thwart President Trump from being elected, obviously by assassination. How? Where? When? What's your proof? And then the next paragraph, really unrelated to anything. It's Shapiro signing a bombs for Ukraine. Okay, whatever. Bad taste. And then next paragraph. In the weeks leading up to the Trump rally, President Joseph R. Biden made frequent visits to defendant Josh Shapiro to discuss the obstacle faced by the Democratic Party. Josh Shapiro organized, scheduled, or schemed, and conspired with other officials to carry out the attempted assassination against former President Donald J. Trump. Now, again, if you're submitting this to a district attorney, so the district attorney can take a look at this and say, okay, I need to file charges, and I need to do so right effing now. You better have a lot of detail and a lot of juice, a lot of sauce to back this up. And then the next paragraph rambles. Okay. it goes on. And if we can flip to the basically the last page, next page, I don't know if it's a, this references previous cases that Shapiro allegedly, and I use that word on this platform, allegedly was involved with and mishandled either deliberately or inadvertently. And you know some of the cases, including a murder that was labeled a suicide and then a child abduction, and there's a few other things, very celebrated cases. Shapiro, of course, was the AG for the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania and previous to his assuming the role of governor. So there is a law enforcement exchange or overlap with Shapiro. Again, why am I spending so much time on this? Because folks understand that we could very well be being played. Okay. Understand that if you create a document like this and you are submitting this for, you're not asking the district attorney or the attorney general, depending on where this ultimately went, to investigate this. You're asking that person to file charges, file state criminal charges. Okay? Like attempted homicide. I could pull, it'd be Title 18, forgive me, I don't know that, I can't remember the statute, Title 18 of the Pennsylvania Crimes Code section, whatever it is, for attempted homicide, and just a whole host of other crimes. We don't have it. It's not there. So I don't know. Again, folks, now, does that mean the information is false? No. Does it mean that there's something else going on there? Mm-hmm. Would I say that Shapiro had a role in this? Well, I wouldn't say it if I couldn't prove it. I would have to couch it something like this. Based on my investigative experience, my research into the matter, as well as my recent investigation, I would say that would warrant additional investigation based on certain things such as, Shapiro visiting Biden visiting Shapiro at very interesting times, and some other things, maybe state police play, whatever it might be. Or, you know, meeting with certain individuals, certain police agencies on the record, or not on the record, but, you know, recorded. I guess what I'm saying is this possible? Absolutely, it's possible. Is there proof in this? No. But again, you're asking for a charging body to charge Shapiro with attempted homicide, attempted murder. You better bring the goods. The goods here are not there. Any questions in the chat? Just real quick, because I really don't want to spend a lot more time on this. I'll just give it a couple of minutes in the chat here. And I'm just looking here. UD333, it helps to have receipts. No, it's required to have receipts when you're filing these papers with a charging body. This needs to be shared like crazy. Don't you agree? What, the private criminal complaint? And no, I don't know about defamation. Do you see anything of substance on Pacer in the RICO file? Oh, okay. The RICO filing is different. I did not address that. I really didn't get into that. I wanted to focus on this. There is some background on that. And I could provide, I'm not prepared to, but I can provide personal experience in that, not in the investigation, but in that RICO and the RICO allegations. Now, okay, the other thing I forgot to mention was this. I saw that this was filed in August, I think August 24th of last year, and it was denied at that time by the, there's a denial there somewhere, denial letter. I think it was denied by the district attorney of Butler County for reasons that other federal and state agencies were investigating this, and that there were, the district attorney was deferring to those agencies at that time. Okay. Then this was refiled again in February, here last week. So, all right. Okay. So the chat, yeah, thank you. And, Real Joy, you're correct. I mean, there, yes, different complaints have to be made with against others, like George Soros and Alex Soros and others. Credibility, and does this impact credibility in a negative way? Nah, I don't know. If this person has the goods and the information, the receipts, no. But if this person doesn't, I'm not even sure. I left that underwhelmed after reading that. I was looking for more information everywhere, thinking, what am I missing? And one last thing, for a federal employee, presumably an FBI agent or somebody within the FBI, to refer to Pennsylvania as the state of Pennsylvania, when everything, you're typing on a form that says a Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, we're a Commonwealth, not a state. It's just my little picadillo, I guess. I don't really, just my picadillo. You refer to it properly. That's all. And Rehoboth Forums, I read four pages of speculation. And you're being charitable. Thank you. Yeah, you're being charitable. Okay. Enough. That's enough of that. But you're going to be hearing all, but you're just going to be hearing so much about this. So much, so much, so much. If you want to put my ex posting up, I think Pozo, Jack, I think Jack might have even commented, because I did put this up. I didn't explain like I explained, obviously, in a post, explain like I explain now, but just pretty much, just lack of everything. Nah, don't worry about it, Eric Dick. I'm sure, oh, there it is right there. Thank you. If, let's see, I've got much to say about this, and it was pretty much the explanation, as opposed to anything else. The documents do appear to be authentic, yes, but lack detail. The criminal standard of, that's the other thing too. If you are filing a criminal, and thank you for keeping that up there, if you are filing a private criminal complaint or a criminal complaint, preponderance of evidence is a civil burden of proof. Beyond a reasonable doubt is a criminal standard, okay? Preponderance of evidence is a civil standard. But that wouldn't even come into play, okay, until you get into litigation. This is just submitting the documentation. But to use preponderance of evidence in the last page, I think, and refer to the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania as the state of Pennsylvania, to me, not the best. Oh, yeah. Jack Posobiec did write back made a comment on my post. Yeah, I reviewed and had the same take, Doug. That's why I haven't shared any of this lack substance for further action, which it does. And I have to say that, I mean, if I disagreed with him, I would absolutely tell you I disagree with him, but I don't. He said it probably. I guess I could have just said all that and saved it 25 minutes, 29 minutes. I don't know. All right. But wait, hold the phone. Video one, cut one. I don't know how many people have seen this. This is Tucker Carlson talking to Piers Morgan. Biden wanted to kill Donald Trump. Now, is this a coincidence, do you think, that this happened? A coincidence of that timing-wise with respect to, hey, Biden wanted to kill Donald Trump, and then having this come out? I don't believe in coincidences. I don't know. I'd have to investigate that, but that's not what I'm looking at. But here's some interesting dialogue between Piers Morgan and Tucker Carlson. Go ahead and play video one.
I do think that shooting, I hope that'll be examined. Because
what's happened with the investigation? We don't know anything about this case.
Well, Piers, I don't know, because you're not from the United States. It's very common for assassins of presidents to have no motive at all.
Extraordinary.
And at the age of 20, to have no social media profile. He never went on the internet.
Nothing.
It's kind of weird.
No record at all.
Yeah, not at all. No cutlery in his own home. Advanced bomb-making skills. Operating drones. Bringing a rangefinder. Making a pretty great offhand shot at 150 yards under duress. It's just normal in America. I mean, the whole thing is so nuts, actually. The fact that the Secret Service allowed this to happen, which they did.
The guy's on the most... Oh, if I was running the Secret Service for the day, what's the first place you'd look? Oh, it would be the flat roof with a direct line on the stage.
You think? And there was not one agent positioned or assigned to look at that. None. They had no idea.
But why?
Well, because they wanted to kill Trump, obviously. The Biden administration wanted to kill Trump. I mean, there's no doubt.
Do you genuinely think?
Of course, I know that. And I know that by what I saw. In other words, if you leave your child inside a locked car on a hot day and go into a casino and spend 3 hours gambling and the kid suffocates, I can say, Piers, you killed your child. And you say, well, I didn't mean to. It doesn't matter. You didn't care enough about your child that you went back and rescued him from suffocation. It's demonstrable. Your intent can be divined from your actions. If you allow a roof 40 yards away to remain unsurveilled, a guy with a rangefinder and a drone to come into your area while the president is kind of speaking, you don't care about saving the life of that man.
Very well stated by Piers Morgan, by Tucker Carlson. I don't think I know. When asked about, do you think Biden, you know, wanted Trump assassinated, wanted Trump dead, and, you know, I don't think I know. That's a pretty strong statement. And I do know, as pointed out by members of the chat, thank you so much. Tucker Carlson has been in contact with, well, he's been to the White House, this past weekend or end of last week, and again the last week, meeting with President Trump, and he's always had open channels with Donald Trump. So and others who have open channels with the security detail, and he's seen the security detail. So I'm going to tell you this: he would know, and pay attention to what he says. He would know. Now, that wasn't the only assassination attempt. This goes on, and we don't have to play this the remainder. Folks, you can watch the entire clip at HagmanPI.com. Click on the headline. That opens up the page, and you can see all of the show notes there. I'll just end this by saying that at the end of the day, with respect to the assassination attempt, and this is something that in Jack's book Bulletproof that he points out, you have 12 elements of failure by the U.S. Secret Service, individual, separate, unrelated, tactically unrelated, but related by the event, but unrelated 12 separate points of failure. To have all 12 and then toss in a shooter, random shooter, the odds of that happening is 1 in 1 septillion, which is more than I can count. But it's not, I mean, the odds are pretty bad. And the reason I bring that up, and there's so much more in the book and such, but the reason I bring this up is because at the end of the day, it's the Secret Service, U.S. Secret Service, that's charged with President Trump's safety and security. So just saying. Would you look elsewhere? Yeah. I'll tell you this. Okay. One thing that I have been doing is I have gone through, I'm going to say, 5 months and perhaps 7,000-8,000 different maps over the last, this would have been since October of last year, September, of devices active at Crook's residence as well as other places, other residences. Doing what would be described as, well, the same thing the Heritage Foundation did, geofencing. I will say that there is sufficient evidence, I think, built within, if one would unmask, and this is important, unmask the IP names, the names of the devices or the identification of the devices. I do believe that you would see a massive conspiracy exposed that would involve the Secret Service. 1, 2, 3 police agencies. Two other federal agencies. 2 business owners. And I don't want to get too specific. A couple of people working for municipal positions. You know, Trump might, if you're saying Trump is compromised, okay. That does not preclude these agencies from being part of a plot to take President Trump out. I believe it was real until I see expert witness IRT to say otherwise. You may disagree. I will not hold it against you, nor will I. Oh, I'm sorry. You're somebody talking to someone else. All right. I'm going to stop. My apologies. I'm going to stop reading the chat at this point because it's somewhat distracting. All right. So now, an interesting little piece from today. And then we're going to get more into some very interesting information about, who's leaking, who's tipping off the ICE operations. Who's tipping them? Who's tipping off the gang members and others about ICE? Who released the funds, the $59 billion or million? What's a billion or a million? Who released those funds from USAID? What about all the judicial interference with respect to President Trump's orders? Going to be getting into that and more as the program progresses. But before I do that, a little bit of a good, it was a good day yesterday with President Trump flying on Air Force One over the Gulf of America, signing February 9th, which was yesterday, National Gulf of America Day. He signed a proclamation. You might not like it, but hey, you know, or you might be ambivalent about it. To me, I thought it was nice for once. We it wasn't a proclamation for Black Lives Matter. It wasn't a proclamation for Transgender Week, month, day, year, whatever. This was a very, very patriotic moment, in my view. Does it mean much? Well, I think it speaks to the spirit of where we could be at, where we're at, and where we could be at as things go forward. Here is cut two.
See you.
So you all set?
Yep.
You know, we're flying over right now. We're flying over a thing called the Gulf of America. And I'm signing a proclamation, and perhaps you could define that.
This is a proclamation declaring today, February 9th, 2025, as the first ever Gulf of America Day. This follows the President's executive order issuing a name change from the Gulf of Mexico to the Gulf of America.
And we're flying right over it right now. So we thought this would be appropriate. Even bigger than the Super Bowl. This is a big thing. And almost everybody now has assented to that.
Attention on board. Ladies and gentlemen, if you could please direct your attention out the right side of the aircraft. Air Force One is currently in international waters for the first time in history flying over the recently renamed Gulf of America. Please enjoy the flight. And we are now about to head westbound to Super Bowl 59.
Wow, yeah. He did that well.
I don't know. To me, that was kind of fun. What do you think? Was that fun? To me, that was fun. All right. At least, again, you know, it's pride in our country. President Trump doing something by renaming Gulf of Mexico to Gulf of America doesn't mean much. Not really. Not by itself. But you know what? It's, again, it's better than having a National Training Month or whatever. You know, it's kind of refreshing to see that. All right. This is kind of an outlier, but it's related to, in my view, it kind of relates to what we were just talking about earlier. This is about the FBI finding secret JFK assassination records after President Trump's order. This is actually page 7 in the show notes. And I thought this was rather interesting. This is from Axios. And the bottom line with this is there are about 2,400 pages within, nestled within 14,000 unreleased pages. If you scroll down just a tad there and catch the first, first couple of paragraphs there. Let me see here. Okay. There are 2,400 records tied to President Kennedy's, thank you, assassination that were never provided to a board tasked with reviewing and disclosing the documents. What this means is that this particular statement, the FBI just discovered about 2,400 records tied to JFK's assassination that were never provided to a board tasked with reviewing and disclosing the documents. That's a huge problem because you don't have 99.9% of the time. I mean, this is up in the septillion range too. The documents related to the assassination of a president don't just, whoops, we just found these and we didn't turn them over to, let's go back. We didn't turn them over to the Warren Commission for what that's worth. We didn't turn them over to the House Select Committee on Assassinations. We didn't turn them over to the 1992 inquiry, congressional inquiry. So nestled among those 14,000 pages of documents that the FBI have to release, right? Because they're still secret, as stated here in this article, were 2,400 pages that people didn't even know existed. Now, President Trump issued an executive order on January 23rd, demanding the release of all JFK documents. This discovery... 61 years? How about 62? Well, okay, 60, whatever. After Kennedy was killed, follows decades of government reluctance to release all documents related to the assassination. Now, the article does state, and I'm not really a fan of this website, the article does state that it's going to be a big nothing burger when they're released. And you know what? Why would it be a big nothing burger? Because anything that would implicate, I believe, anyone living, dead, president, or whoever, or anything of substance would have been expunged in some way. I mean, just totally wiped out, obliterated. But you never know. All right, I wanted to touch on that. Because I do believe, folks, that there is, in my view, just a hint of similar conspiracy between the JFK and the President Trump assassination. Just a hint. All right. I mentioned about ICE being tipped off by somebody, some agency. I mean, not ICE, but the illegals, especially the gangs. Remember Aurora, Colorado? We talked about that last week. ICE showed up. The apartment buildings were empty. Where did the gang members go? Oh, well, they were never here. And even if they were here, there was only maybe three or four. And, you know, they, right? That's what they want you to believe. But wait a second. No, the rot is so bad in the intelligence community. It's going to take a lot of time and a lot of people to get nailed to get these people out. This is cut number 5 in the show notes. Guess who leaked? Guess who leaked? Guess what agency would leak? Yeah, the FBI. Does that surprise you? It shouldn't. Here's cut 5. It's a minute and a half long. Here it is.
America's top cop telling us right now that they believe that someone inside the FBI may have been talking with and communicating with the news media, and that may explain why the news media was following them and actually there before law enforcement arrived at every single one of these locations. And what's really interesting about this is I can't remember any president or any kind of authority that has been any more transparent than the Trump administration so far. Matter of fact, Tom Holen, whether it's Homeland Security or the new AG, has been more transparent about what they're doing. If you went to the social media accounts just last week for Homeland Security and ICE, there were daily updates. There were videos. There were pictures of the arrests and where they were going. Those have all shut down. After these leaks, you cannot find any information about what they're doing, what they're conducting. And for a news media that was so critical of these operations, they have now just lost their mind. They're like, why are we not getting information? Why are you not telling us stuff? And I'll tell you why. They're now afraid to give information because it's become so dangerous to share information with local media. And we're seeing this also in other locations. We also saw the Los Angeles Times not only say that the FBI there in Los Angeles had given them tips, but they named their sources. They are now moving so quickly and so without repercussions, they're naming the FBI agents that have given them information. So we now know that the FBI has leaked this information.
Wow. That's pretty, and I'm using this phrase deliberately. That takes some big balls, doesn't it? Oh, you heard about big balls. Okay, well, that clip, folks, that information should not surprise anyone. The media, of course, is an enemy. They're acting as enemies of our nation, our enemies. The FBI, certainly, most certainly, leaking out information to the media, CNN, other outlets. Again, no surprise there, just verification. And the fact that these people want to see this agenda just uprooted so badly. They will put your children, my children, at risk. And everyone should be absolutely incensed about this. This is a bunch of crap. And it takes big balls to do that. But I'm going to tell you right now, big balls. Oh, have I got a story for you? Because in case you haven't heard this, and I'm not being profane, I don't mean to be, but because of the media hysteria surrounding a 19-year-old computer whiz using at one point in his youth, or when he was youther, the handle Big Balls, using that as his screen name, he has a new role at the U.S. State Department. Now, this young man is a computer wizard. And you might think, well, 19, how much of a wizard can you be? Well, think about some of the people that have started companies and been very successful at age 19. And think about, at that age, how literate you can be with respect to computers. More on that in just one second. I want to, let me just, there we go. You know, it's cold out. And I don't like to be cold. I like to be warm. Folks, after an extremely warm summer last year, we had a warm summer. We saw a spike in power bills. Now households are seeing the same problem with heating bills as America heads into the peak of a very, very frigid cold winter. Families are bringing attention to exceptionally high heating bills they've received earlier this month that are almost double that of the previous month. The rise in utility costs, man, it's bad. They're even forcing some to have to decide between paying for food, medicine, or their heating bill. So I want you to go to staywarmnow.com. Staywarmnow.com. I want to thank them for their fine product. It's a great product. Staywarmnow.com. I use this amazing device, this portable heater, and I love how it keeps me toasty warm. It does, without the added heating costs. It's an amazing device, portable, powerful, makes any one of my rooms warm and cozy in no time. It's compact enough. I could take it anywhere. I could take it on trips with me, wherever. But it's powerful enough to warm up any room in the house or office or wherever you might be when you need instant warmth. Plus, it includes a built-in safety features like overheat protection and adjustable heat levels, from simple warmth to toasty comfort, which my family and I love. And we love the lower heating bills or the non-added expenses for additional heat. So do your wallet a favor. Grab one of these devices for up to 60% off this winter season only. Do so at staywarmnow.com. Plus, order today and you'll get free expedited shipping, a 60-day satisfaction guarantee, and several other free bonuses. Once again, that's staywarmnow.com. Staywarmnow.com. All right. So I don't know how many people heard about this mashup with oh my gosh, you know, the liberal heads were going crazy. And in fact, I'll tell you how crazy they were going, talking about how could Elon Musk, or how can the Department of Government Efficiency have someone at 19 years old who previously in his youth used such an offensive name. As a matter of fact, they were so incensed. Well, they talked about it, and they talked about it a lot and a lot and a lot, as illustrated by video 9 in the show notes. That's cut 9. Here's 36 seconds showing the hysteria of the left-wing media. Here it is.
Good evening. Thanks for joining us. We begin tonight with Musk and Big Balls.
Big Balls.
Big Balls.
Big Balls, who work for Elon Musk's so-called Department of Government Efficiency, Doge.
In the one case of the Big Balls kid, a literal teenager.
Big Balls online. Big Balls here that Katie's talking about.
A 19-year-old that goes by the username Big Balls.
So that would be one way that we could refer to him.
Young computer whizzes, the aforementioned Big Balls.
Because who among us doesn't feel better about Big Balls?
Big Balls.
Big Balls in charge of American air traffic control.
Yeah. Okay. So there's the obsession with that. The person behind that screen name is Edward Korestein. I believe that's how you pronounce his last name. 19 years old. He was just elevated in part because of that. You know, you start saying all of this and you start putting a lot of shine on someone. Musk looked at him, looked at his previous, his past, what he's able to do, his capabilities, what he's done. Pretty soon, he's getting a new position. And this is just what happened. So, he used that unfortunate nickname, by the way, again, when he was younger. And there was also an offensive posting with that on social media. But again, after, he is now working at the behest of Elon Musk at the Department of Government Efficiency, who looked in his background and found, yeah, a couple of things, but what they found was an incredible talent to write code, to identify lapses. So they brought him in. Now, this guy worked at one point with Musk in the Neuralink area. And I know a lot of people, and I myself too, I am not happy. I don't like Neuralink. Just saying, that's where he worked. Leave it to Eric. You know what, brother? I'll tell you, young man. You find him. I didn't even know that existed, but thank you. Rolling up the chat now. All right. So the bottom line here is he is now into inciting position, I guess. The position that he's in will actually suit him better than he was before. And that's all because of the media hysteria. That's all. I had to put that out there. You might say, well, so what? Well, you know what? Sometimes things backfire. All right. Now, a couple of things that are really nasty, and I'm really hacked off at this. The uniparty federal judges are trying to stop President Trump. And the more people scream about what President Trump and the Department of Government Efficiency is doing, whether it's with USAID or whether it's with the Federal Bureau of Consumer Protection, that agency, or whether it's with the Department of Education, regardless, the more they scream and yell, the more guilty and involved they are. And this does not, it's just not, It involves more than the bureaucrats. It involves every level of every sector of our society, including judges. You saw Judge Mershon, his daughter being making money because of the trial of President Trump. Well, think of it this the same way. Here is just a short clip. Uniparty, this is cut three in the show notes. Uniparty federal judges unlawfully and dangerously curtailing President Trump. This is Mike Davis. It makes a lot of sense here. Have a listen. And oh, one more thing. Can judges, federal judges, can they stick their nose, being that they're within the judiciary, can they stick their nose into the executive branch? The various departments, the executive department, the departments under the executive branch are just that. Can you have a judge overrule a policy decision of a president? And even if you did, or even if you could, remember what Biden did. The Supreme Court says, hey, Biden, you can't do that as president. And that involved a couple of issues, including but not limited to student loans. But he did it anyway. Maybe President Trump should do the same thing. Here's cut three.
President Trump campaigned on the fact that he was going to set up DOGE with Elon Musk, and he was going to make dramatic reforms to the executive branch to cut waste fraud, and abuse. And the American people like what they heard, and they gave the president a very broad electoral mandate on November 5th. 312 electoral votes, all seven swing states, and President Trump is implementing what the American voters elected him to do. He's actually doing what he campaigned on, which is unheard of in Washington, D.C. And then you have these uniparty federal judges, these activist judges who are unlawfully, unconstitutionally, dangerously trying to curtail the president's Article 2 powers. For example, we have a judge telling the president and his Treasury secretary that they can't look at spending data at the Department of the Treasury. That is certainly not constitutional for a judge to rule that. The president has the executive power. He is the chief executive officer of the executive branch. He has a constitutional duty to take care that our laws are faithfully executed. And this judge thinks he can tell the president and his secretary of treasury, you can't look at what the federal government is spending money on. Is this judge completely out of his mind? Yes, he is. You have judges telling the president that, for example, he can't recall foreign service officers serving overseas at USAID. He can't recall them within 30 days like the president ordered. This judge says, oh, wait, we have to wait like 6 months or 9 months to do this because it's going to cause too much disruption for these overseas USAID employees. And this was a Republican-appointed judge. This was a Trump judge in D.C. It just shows you that these uniparty judges have lost their mind. This judge, Carl Nichols, actually thinks that the president of the United States, the commander-in-chief, cannot bring government employees home within 30 months. Has he lost his mind? Yes.
And that clip goes on, and you can watch the entire clip again at HagmanPI.com. But this is what's happening right now. You've got federal judges now filing or ruling. You've got groups going to filing lawsuits against President Trump and against the Department of Government Efficiency. And they're judge shopping, and they're finding these activist judges who will rule in their favor. They know it before they go into the courtroom, and they will file within that jurisdiction. And then, of course, you see what happens. The judge will rule favorably in favor of the plaintiff against the president for a temporary restraining order on whatever measure there might be, whatever the issue might be. We have birthright citizenship. That's an issue. You have, as Mike Davis explained, the Treasury. Imagine being told, hey, you're the head of the Treasury, but you can't, you can't have access to your records. Okay. It's ridiculous. So the bottom line here is we have this run. This is the only way that the left is going to be able to throw these monkeys into the wrench or the flies into the ointment is this way. Short of like blowing up the, burning the house down. This is about the only way, only recourse they have. And again, this is going to be this will be elevated to the Supreme Court. But will the executive branch necessarily comply with the TROs, the temporary restraining orders, or not? I have a feeling that there is another shoe to drop here within the executive branch. I know for a fact that President Trump's team has thought this through and knows exactly how they are going to play this out. They were anticipating these lawsuits. Hey, you can't take prisoners or illegals to Gitmo. No, Can't do it, says one judge. Another, again, you can't see your own records. Another judge, birthright citizenship, you can't end birthright citizenship. And by the way, speaking of birthright citizenship, there is no such thing anymore as birthright citizenship. If you want to talk to your friends, neighbors, and family, and, you know, just extol how... show how just intelligent you are. Birthright citizenship. Of course not. I didn't bring the right one. Anyway, birthright citizenship from memory obviously had to do with the children of indentured servants or slaves. And that there's a clause in the birthright citizenship was Article 2, Section 2 of the Constitution. I'm not even sure. Again, I have the wrong one here. But it's you've got to, there's two parts to it. The important part is and subject to the jurisdiction thereof. So in other words, a person who is not a citizen of this country, comes to this country, has a child. And we argued or we debated this or spoke about this during the Obama birth certificate issue, which was really irrelevant anyway, but has a child in America that mom's not a U.S. citizen. And for that matter, dad isn't either a U.S. citizen at the time of the birth. Then that child is not subject to the jurisdiction of our nation. And the same with the parents. So they could be deported. So this lawfare, I don't know what else to call it, by an activist judge for the birthright citizenship to say, no, you cannot toss these people out, or, you know, these invaders that came in and claiming birthright citizenship, to have a judge say you cannot evict them from our country is nothing more than activism. So you also have to take a look at the 19 states, the attorneys general of 19 different states that filed amicus briefs on these various different judicial activist rulings. I think out of the 19, 17 are backed by Soros. And I'm being charitable here because I did read where I think all 19, and I'm not sure where I read this, but all 19 were in some way, shape, or form either financed by or have associations with the Soros family. So there you have it. And with respect to USAID, I want to touch on this very quickly here. The USAID was started under Kennedy. And I want to just make sure people understand this. This was started under Executive Order 10973. Now, there was something at that time called the Foreign Assistance Act of 1961. USAID was an optional or like an add-on of the Foreign Assistance Act of 1961, but was never codified. So what does that mean? It means that it was created by executive order. So rather than attempt to go through everything with USAID and have people at the door and all of that, President Trump has the ability just to completely say, okay, we're done. That's it. Everything's done. But, you know, and just cut the losses and say you're done, and would be well within his rights. But again, you're looking at this activism out there. So just so people understand where things are, this, again, USAID created by an executive order can be taken out by executive order. Simple as that. It's amazing it's an amazing thing to see how many people are fighting against the system or fighting against President Trump trying to clean up the system. Speaking of that, interestingly enough, I don't know how folks, how do you feel about this? The penny. Did you know that it cost three? And I had to verify this, and I did verify this. The actual cost to create one penny, one U.S. penny, one U.S. cent, 3.7 cents. 3.7 cents per penny. Not 3 cents, not 2 cents, but north of 3.5 cents. 3.7 cents per penny. And right now, as of right now, there are 114 billion pennies in circulation, or $1.14 billion, if you like that in dollars. So what's going to happen in the... And President Trump said, okay, that's it. We're not spending 3.7 cents to make something worth 1 cent. It's not even worth that, but you get the idea. So what's going to happen? Oh, people are going nuts out there. I don't know if you've seen it. Oh, now it's going to be, everything's going to be rounded up. Whether it's 1995, it'll be 20. Well, it's 20 anyway. 1999, it'll be 20, yeah, of course. But folks, with $1.14 billion in pennies out there, it's going to take quite a while for that to really take have any impact whatsoever. So I wanted to mention that to you because I found that very interesting. And that was over the weekend. Notice no Super Bowl talk right now, or tonight, because just don't care. I just don't care. So moving on with the judicial activism, I want to show you this. Doge, are we in the midst of a constitutional crisis? This is Senator Rick Scott saying some good stuff today. Now, whether you like Scott or not, it doesn't matter. He's on point with this message. There are leftist media outlets saying, oh, this is causing a constitutional crisis. President Trump is a dictator. He's taking over all these agencies. He's doing this. He's doing that. It's not constitutional. Yeah, my patoot. No, my backside. It is constitutional. It's within his right. Any agency under the purview of the executive branch, it's his right. And as a matter of fact, it's his duty to clean out or shut down. Here is Rick Scott basically saying to the leftist media, shut up and sit down. We're not in the Constitution. President Trump is allowed to do this. This is cut seven.
Is your response to, for example, Senator Chris Murphy? Chris Murphy says we're in the midst of a constitutional crisis. I want to play this and get your response to your colleague. Play cut 13, please.
Listen, I think this is the most serious constitutional crisis the country has faced, certainly since Watergate. The president is attempting to seize control of power and for corrupt purposes. The president wants to be able to decide how and where money is spent so that he can reward his political friends. He can punish his political enemies. That is the evisceration of democracy.
Your response to your fellow senator.
I mean, he's completely full of it. I mean, here, Donald Trump was elected. He has a mandate to start watching how the money's being spent. What Chris Murphy, I don't know what he's talking about. We should watch how we spend every dollar. That's exactly what Trump is doing. That's what Elon Musk is doing. He's showing us the unbelievable abuse there is in the system. He's not doing it to help a political ally or hurt somebody else. He's saying, you want to waste money? Anywhere in the world. I mean, some of these things the USAID was spending money on makes no sense. So Trump's doing what he should be doing. And he's talking about what's important to the American public, balance of budget. So I'm very appreciative of what everybody at Doge is doing. I appreciate what Elon Musk is doing. We've got to go through every line. We've got to get all this money out. Charlie, think about this. In the last 5 years, we've had a 2% increase in population and a 53% increase in spending. If we went back to spending 5 years ago, we would balance a budget. We would balance a budget. That means interest rates will come down. That means inflation will go away. We can do that. We should be doing that right now.
You know, all of this really began at this level. You could cite the COVID era, I suppose, the beginning of COVID. However, If you go back in history and you look at the financial irresponsibility, really beginning with George H.W. Bush, all right? Some would blame Ronald Reagan even before Bush, with, you know, supplies or voodoo economics, as George H.W. Bush called it. But a complete reversal of the Reaganomics was George H.W. Bush. And then from there, you could see the chart goes with what we're spending and the debt. It really takes off. So I'm just saying, it's both Republican and Democrat. It's really deep state versus all of us. And that's and that's really the important thing to understand. Speaking of USAID, USAID, I don't like to call it USAID, it's USAID. Look, this is so important to play. It's 6 minutes long, but we won't play the entire 6 minutes. You remember Samantha Power, right? How many people remember Samantha Power? Oh, I'm sure everyone in the chat does, because you guys are like the core brains, brawn of the program. By the way, Kansas Dudas, Kansas Dudas. I get it now. Okay. USAID has been active since OSS was created during World War II. That's right. The names were different, but the intent was the same. Run by William Donovan. They have always hired strange people, and it was all about propaganda. It's only gotten more devious. Very true. And to prove your point, boy, you could have done some show prep for me today, but to prove your point, it is going to be Cut 8 coming up. But before I get to Cut 8, and Samantha Power and the bioweapons, and the military program behind the bioweapons, I wanted to mention that, by the way, that's Kansas Dudas. Instead of dude, Kansas Dudas. Love it. I wanted to mention that, people describe Ukraine, and I've described it as the bank and laundromat for the deep state actors here in the U.S. and really the globalists all across the world. That's true. It really is. It's really a laundromat, again, for the deep state actors. So if Ukraine is that, what is U.S. aid, given the fact that you've got all of these programs being run through USAID? I did my, and I apologize, I said USAID, USAID. He would be the chief bookkeeper, the person holding the checkbook, I suppose, while Ukraine is in theory like the bank or the bank / laundromat. USAID would be the controller, the funnel, the person or the organization with the checkbook, the person that really drags a VIG. And if you think about it, takes a VIG. That's the way, the more I looked into this, the VIG is a cut for the house, right? If the deep state globalists are the house, you could say that USAID is giving them the VIG. I was thinking about that and wanted to share that with you. I don't know what you think about that, but let's get back to the bioweapons in the Ukraine. And I should add that a Russian general, in exposing this, folks, you know about this too, was murdered as he exposed these bioweapon labs in Ukraine. And of course, these are all conspiracy things, right? No bioweapon labs in Ukraine. Let's go to Cut 8, Samantha Power, our friend Samantha Power. Here it is.
Function research, that's not the question. You know.
The question is, did you fund coronavirus research in Wuhan, China?
Before my time, there was the PREDICT program with which you're familiar, which ended in China in 2019.
Now, this is a $200 million program, and the GAO has also identified that some of these grants went directly to the Wuhan Institute of Virology, where there is a suspicion that the lab leak began that began the pandemic. Has USAID awarded funds to the Academy of Military Medical Sciences in China?
Not to my knowledge, but I'd have to get...
I think the answer is, once again, yes. GAO has found that there have been subawards of NIH money, as probably as well as USAID money, that went to the Academy of not just medical research, military medical research in China. Now, part of the unknowns here is we can't get the records to look at this. So I've been asking for months and months for records. In September of last year, I wrote Ms. Powers, the USAID, a request asking for records from the PREDICT program. These are not classified. These are simply records of scientific research. And we want to read the grants to find out what they were doing and whether the research was dangerous or not. The response I got from your agency was USAID will not be providing any documents at this time. They're just unwilling to give documents on scientific grant proposal. We're paying for it. They're asking for $745 million more in money, and we get no response. So 2 weeks ago, the ranking member, Risch, myself, and 25 other Republican senators, unfortunately, so far, signed a letter once again. It's still no response. We're not asking for classified information. We're not asking for anything unusual. 20 million people died around the world. You're supposed to be an agency that cares about the death of people around the world. We, you know, talk about starvation and famine, and 20 million people died from a virus, and you won't give us the basic information about what grants you're funding around the world and who you're funding. Should we be funding the Academy of Military Medical Research in China? They're now off limits. But did we fund them? And who was making the decision? You know who ran the PREDICT program? UC Davis. Have you had any conversations with UC Davis about research in China and whether it was advisable?
So again, to set the record straight, first of all, the PREDICT program ended in 2019. We have people...
And yet it goes on in other forms and other names.
That's certainly not USAID program.
Well, you have a program called Emergency Pandemic Threats Program still, don't you?
If I could just finish in response to the first set of allegations, we have provided hundreds and hundreds of pages of documents related to the PREDICT program for the very reason that you say, because we are...
Not to us.
We are, again, as I know you had an exchange with Secretary Blinken as well, consistent with longstanding practice.
Not going to give them to us.
Responsive to the committees of jurisdiction.
Not going to. You've been consistent in not giving us any information.
That's not true.
But we've provided
hundreds of pages in response to the Kerry ranking.
To whom?
The Senate Homeland Security and Government Affairs Committee, for example. We've had extensive...
We've been requesting this and gotten none of it. I'm on that committee as well. The thing is what we get from you and from the State Department at large is that if Senator Menendez signs it, you'll give it documents. Until then, you'll give us nothing. And we have gotten nothing, zero. You said, we'll not be providing any documents. I now have 25 senators have sent you a letter, and you aren't responding.
Well,
and we want to see the scientific grants. We give you the money. The taxpayers give you the money. We deserve to know where the money went, whether it happened. Look, you're right. It ended in 2019. When did the virus come about? In about 2019. Some of the research proposals that came about in 2018 were Wuhan Institute of Virology asking for money to create a virus with a furin cleavage site in it, a coronavirus, a SARS-like virus with a furin cleavage site. That's exactly what COVID turned out to be. They wanted money to create such a virus. So we want to know, are there other research proposals that you either granted or denied that were on the same veins of creating viruses that could have become COVID-19? We can't tell because you won't give us information.
Again, we're consistent with longstanding practice. We are providing extensive documentation. We have a whole
That's
team of people
not
who do
true.
Nothing other than
That's
look back and
true.
Predict.
That is not
it
true.
It is factually accurate.
That is
it
not
is.
True. Everything we have asked, we have not gotten. I have not seen one document on the PREDICT program.
I understand that, again, consistent with common practice
consistent
across
that you're not going to give it to any senator.
No, we're providing... all of the kinds of documentation that you're
You are
describing.
Not. You're
we
being
are.
Dishonest.
We,
you're being
no,
dishonest.
I'm not. I'm
we haven't gotten
not.
One scrap of
All right.
paper from you.
All right. You get the idea. This does go on and on and on. And you notice how the answers by these unelected bureaucrats, isn't it something that you have, as an aside, you've got the left media pundits, you got the Rachel Madcows, you got everyone on the left saying, well, we didn't, who elected Musk? He's an unelected bureaucrat. Wait a second. You've got what? How many? What, 10,000, 14,000 at USAID, unelected bureaucrats? You've got people saying, hell no, I'm not going to leave. I'm not going to step down. I don't care what President Trump says. I don't have to. These petulant, these man children and it's ridiculous. But here you got Samantha Power, and this should not be understated. The role of Samantha Power. And who is she married to again? That's right, Cass Sunstein. Okay, remember, two of the biggest Marxist, Maoist, I think, on the planet. Former Samantha Power was Obama's national security advisor. She was the ambassador to the UN at one point, I think, under Obama. Was it under Obama? Yeah, I'm pretty sure. A lot of bad things happened under Obama involving Samantha Power, and as well as she was involved tangentially, too, in fueling some of the disinformation with respect to the Russian collusion hoax, okay, at the periphery of it. It seems like everyone had their hands in that pie. But you can watch the entire clip, but you get the idea. They're not going to give this information. And Rand Paul said, look, this was a military operation. This was funded through you, essentially, as well, funded through you to the University of UC Davis. And that's among other funneling money channels, but you get the idea, right? These things now are coming out. Let me tell you a little bit about what President Trump is doing right now, because you have to take a look at this as a whole. And I'm just going to, I've written some things down. I found a column interesting at the American Thinker, which, I think I might have written a couple of sentences. I'll put that in the show notes. That was by Ted Knoll. You have to wonder, for example, do people like Schumer, do people like Maxine Waters and others, do they really believe, for example, that $20 million for Sesame Street in Iraq, is that really needed? Is that somehow going to benefit us? Are any of the foreign aid plans by USAID, are they benefiting us in any way, shape, or form? You don't need, I mean, we could be here all evening talking about the different different recipients. The money that is slated, for example, the $1.5 million in promoting diversity, equity, and inclusion in Serbia, for example, is not about diversity, equity, and inclusion. No. There's things that are much more sinister behind this. Remember President Eisenhower when he coined the term military-industrial complex? This revolving door between the Defense Department and manufacturers of bombs and bullets. Now I'm citing from the title of the article is Trump's Chess Game is Improving by Ted Knoll. Okay. Gratitude. Okay, so I'm sorry. The revolving door saw the Department of Defense ask for munitions and shovel the money to manufacturers, and those manufacturers made handsome profits. So gratitude for those profits led the war industry to reward its patrons with campaign contributions. and other private benefits. World War II. Remember, all wars are bankers' wars, right? World War II actually filled that feed trough full of money. I mean, so much money, you just can't believe it. And after the war, the profits of the defense industry would shrink as the money in the feeder dried up. Why wouldn't it? Because you're not feeding that war machine anymore. This is why the state of perpetual war is so important for people. So, is it any surprise that the Korean War, the Korean conflict, as they call it, started not long after World War II ended? No, of course not. It's not difficult to make a case, for example, that the U.S. has been in a near constant state of war for a very long time. And to be sure, we have. It's obvious why certain political people, for example, the rhinos, the leftists, the never Trumpers, it's obvious why they're so adamant that we need to support the cause, whatever the cause might be at the time, with our hard-earned wealth. This is what all of this is about tonight. All of this is about the money. All of it is, if you follow the money, you'll have all the answers you need, except when they won't let you follow the money, which I explained earlier. I mentioned about the creation of USAID, created by President Kennedy, by Executive Order 10973. After the Foreign Assistance Act of 1961 permitted him to do so. USAID, the creation of that entity, was optional. And left-wing apologists claim that the Foreign Affairs Reform and Restructuring Act of 1998, remember that, because you're going to be hearing about that more and more, as the constitutionality of President Trump's actions are being assailed by the left. The left is saying, look, this act of 1998 turned USAID into a congressionally mandated organization. It didn't. It did not. When the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare was split in 1980, and I remember when this happened, and this was also under President Carter, you know, the guy who gave away the canal, Panama Canal, the guy who created the Department of Education, where we went from number one in the world in the standing of education to number 24, drop like a rock. Department of Health, Education, and Welfare was split in 1980 under Carter. It was accomplished by the Department of Education Organization Act. So Carter created the Department of Education under the Department of Education Organization Act, which said, there is established an executive department to be known as the Department of Education. No such language exists anywhere regarding USAID. Okay, so USAID, that can be kicked to the curb without any problem. All right. The Department of Government Efficiency is another case of gaslighting by the left. Tom Renz, if you follow him on X, man, he is like right on. He's a friend of the program. He's been on the program. He's done a lot of work exposing the scam brought forth by the frightened, by the rats running out of the swamp, by these swamp creatures. The Department of Government Efficiency is not efficiency, and I want to know how many people know this. Did you know this is not a new organization? Huh? I thought it was just created. Well, the Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE as it's known, yeah, it was created under that name. But it's not a new entity at all. President Trump, by way of his executive order, masterfully changed the name of the U.S. Digital Service into the U.S. DOGE Service. It doesn't even change the letters of the government software, the development agency created under Obamacare. It just changes the entity into something useful. Did you catch that? We already had a Department of Government Efficiency, so to speak, or we already had a department like that. It was called the United States Digital Service. President Trump used the same acronym and changed it into United States DOGE Service. Because DOGE is inside the government, it doesn't have to answer questions about how its employees have access to government computers, okay? And President Trump has full authority under Article 2, Section 1, Sentence 1, to give access to anyone he wants. Being inside at the beginning just makes it easier, and there is just a little bit more fun stuff to tell you, because this is where the fight is going to take place. It's already taking place. But it's interesting because President Trump 2.0 is a little bit more cagey and a little bit more refined than before. And you know what? It looks like he has the tools in his toolbox to beat the swamp this time. It is well known that President Trump and Musk, like them or don't like them, they carefully planned every step of how they were going to do this. What does this drain the swamp? Remember when Musk got rid of a whole bunch of people at Twitter or X? The majority, I think, of workers at X, yet still managed to get everything done. Think maybe young people like, excuse the expression, big balls, people like that would make 5 or 6 of me? I think so. You put the right people in. I was just waiting for, I did that to give Eric the tech that, you know, and okay. So here's where this is going to end up. By making DOGE a reconstruction of the U.S. United States Digital Service and keeping the acronym, renaming it, but keeping it under the executive branch, he can do anything he wants. Put anyone in that he wants, take anyone out, do whatever that he wants. This has been carefully planned. The whiz kid, like I mentioned, you know, big balls, the people like that, they're doing the audits, the algorithmic audits of all over the government. They did the same job at X, and they refined their software, and then they reprogrammed it for the government. This is what's happening right now. They honed their skills, they refined their skills, allowing computers to collate and reorganize the financial records and the meaningful results, and no one's personal data was revealed. No, no. If money for USAID programs was diverted, the term for that is misappropriation of funds. You and I know that. And if we did that with our businesses or whatever, well, that's punishable by up to 10 years under 18 USC Section 641 for those keeping track at home. So, when you hold that over the people's heads, say, wait a second, weren't you the one that authorized this money? Weren't you the one that, against our orders, weren't you the one that, sent this money over here against our orders? Think about this, folks. Just think about this. The brilliance of this. And I do think it's brilliant. They've got them. You think that somebody is going to go to jail for someone else within USAID? Some purple-haired, ring-toting through the nose soy boy is going to say, yeah, okay, I'm going to man up suddenly and omerta, keep my mouth shut, omerta. No, I don't think so. DOGE is inside the executive branch of government with full access granted by the president. Unless its employees, and I'm only going to say this one time and be done with this, unless its employees reveal privileged information, for example, just like the IRS employee did with President Trump's tax returns. Remember that? Yeah. Now, unless they reveal privileged information, they're not breaking any laws when they do their automated audits. The screaming by the left about who elected Elon, it's a non-starter. Again, who elected the 2 million or so employees of the federal government? The left is upset because it's not their guys and gals doing the audit. Oh, and early on, I did mention this, and to kind of wrap this all up, the judicial activism, the judges saying, you can't do this. Kind of like clones of Engoron, Judge Engoron. Remember him? Man. Article 3, Section 2. The Constitution starts with the judicial power shall extend to all cases in law and equity. And it goes on. Okay. There's a word in there. The word is controversies. Now, the article I mentioned at American Thinker addresses this by Ted Knoll. I'll put the link in the program description box, full attribution to him. It pops up several times in that section of the Constitution. Now, for a legal controversy to exist, at least two parties must have a cognizable disagreement. That other word identifies an argument that the court has authority to settle. And this is the problem for the swamp. And this is where the swamp must take the bull squarely by the tail and face the situation. Okay, this, again, from that article, Trump's attorneys did their homework. None of those cases, when under the scrutiny of SCOTUS or any other reasonable non-activist judge, when they look at these, they can't go anywhere. They legally cannot go anywhere. Congress is boxed out because these are policy decisions by the executive branch. No congressperson was harmed in the making of that decision. That's from the article. No federal employee has a property interest in the existence of his job. The Civil Service Act provides no procedural protections for firing from a job. But if the job no longer exists, the employee is simply out of luck. Pressing delete on the USA, on USAID is that sort of situation. End of story. I thought that was fantastic. So, again, Lawfare 2.0 in progress right now against President Trump. Last thing on my schedule, I want to bring your attention to this. This is going to rear its ugly head, and I mean ugly head, real soon. This is cut six. It's just over a minute long. Folks, the hostages that Hamas has, you saw the condition of the hostages. Not good. Not good. They're trying to delay the hostage release. President Trump is not happy. Here's cut six.
After those three hostages were released here just in the last few days that looked like they had been at a concentration camp. They were skin and bones. They looked awful, like they hadn't been fed in nearly 500 days. They didn't even look like the same people. And I think that's why Hamas is throwing the brakes on this, because they realize how bad this looks. And if the next group of hostages are as bad or worse, they're going to be hell to pay, isn't there?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And this is the reason why you do not legitimize and you do not compromise and negotiate with a terrorist organization. And when you think about the optics, consider how these individuals, those three and the other hostages that have been released, were forced to walk through a gauntlet of people there in Gaza, to include Hamas fighters, in order to get to the Red Cross vehicles that took them to freedom and to safety. So this whole propaganda piece that they are trying to promote, trying to show that they're tough, as well as the fact that Israel is releasing what, hundreds of terrorists back to Hamas. No, we should not do this. The only thing that Hamas has to understand is their complete and total decimation. And right now, Hamas should be very careful about this, because they do not have Iran in a position that will be a firm supporter of what they're doing. Because guess what? There's the old sheriff is back in town, and his name is Donald Trump.
There you have it. And I do believe that we are going to be looking at some form of retribution. Sadly, I as much as I don't want to see any of this, when you have Hamas dragging their feet to release the hostages, knowing, of course, that President Trump said, look, we want to release now or there's going to be hell to pay. I would say there's going to be hell to pay. And I really don't like the way that is going to look, because there will be innocents that will be killed. I guarantee you. Just saying. Lastly, on some good news, though, remember Rush Limbaugh talking about your washer? Nah, man, you know, the top loading washers with when you could fill it up with 20 gallons of water. Now it's only like two. The toilets don't flush properly. The water pressure of the shower heads suck. The dishwashers, the high efficiency dishwashers. Remember Rush Limbaugh talking about all this? By executive action, President Trump said no more paper straws today. No more paper straws. The federal government is the biggest consumer of paper straws. Back to plastic if you want it. The reason I mentioned that is because I can't wait until he addresses washers, dryers that don't dry, washers that really don't wash, toilets that don't really flush, showerettes that don't give you a lot of water, and so on. You know what I'm talking about, folks. I'll tell you what, I'm cautiously optimistic about the way things are going and will continue to go. be careful, folks, of what you read out there, what you see, what you are given to, you know, to believe, because it's a minefield out there. Don't trip up. Really, err on the side of caution. I'm glad you, thank you for joining me tonight. May God bless each and every one of you. Remember, tomorrow I'm scheduled on the, I believe, second hour of InfoWars with Alex Jones. It's going to be a good time. Haven't been with him in a while, so it's going to